Welcome to the Undivided Podcast. Today, I respond to criticism about a segment I did on Kyle Rittenhouse. Plus, why I'm putting my support behind Initiative 1436, which would make the state's long-term care tax optional. Also, a new segment on SNL that is actually pretty funny.
The game is simple. We're gonna meet some people, and our contestants have to guess whether they're Republican or not.
I'm Brandi Cruz. Thanks so much for joining us on the Undivided Podcast. I really like having a new podcast come out every Monday because on Sundays, I do the full digital episode of Undivided. And so it's nice on Monday to sort of respond to comments and any criticism that might arise from the show. It's a good way to answer feedback. I will say I got quite a bit of criticism about a segment I did on Kyle Rittenhouse. Now, the general theme of the segment was that you have members of the media and politicians who want to say that this verdict was racist or, you know, about white supremacy, which is absolutely absurd. And that was the overarching point of my segment. But I did get a lot of criticism for something I said at the very beginning. Listen. Kyle Rittenhouse was a punk kid who should have stayed home. But in the eyes of the law, Kyle Rittenhouse is not guilty. So there are a few people, I'll read some comments from my Patreon page from subscribers that they posted on that video. Tracy wrote, Brandi, I love your middle ground logic and agree mostly with you, but please define for me your definition of a punk. I don't think of Rittenhouse as a hero either, but definitely not a punk kid. I believe his intentions were honorable. Darren also took issue with it, saying maybe by today's standards and sentiments, Kyle's behavior is unacceptable, but we would never have founded this nation if we went by today's standards. Our founders would not have disapproved of him stepping up in the absence of any other authority. Men younger than Kyle fought in our war for independence. Tony wrote, I'm not feeling the label punk you applied to Rittenhouse here. I agree that good judgment would be to avoid the situation, but do you victim blame a rape victim for going into a raucous biker bar? Your overall view is consistent and rational, but you cheapen it by not pointing out that Antifa and BLM rioters are all punks and that Kyle was attacked by punks while in a place he had every right to be. So let me talk about my phrasing of the word punk. First, I should note, my original thought was to say dumbass, but I didn't want to say dumbass on video, so I said punk instead. And look, here's my rationale and how I go in. I think it's important to talk a little bit about my approach to controversial topics. And this is really the type of work I've done for about 6 years now, which is to try to cover things in a way that get rational thinking people on both sides to come to some sort of agreement or understanding or consensus. When I go about doing that, I think it's important to make some acknowledgments that will bring people aboard. And that's why I said this. Kyle Rittenhouse is not a hero. He's not a role model for youth. He's not a poster boy for self-defense. Kyle Rittenhouse was a punk kid who should have stayed home. But in the eyes of the law, Kyle Rittenhouse is not guilty. And by introducing this segment that way and segueing into the ridiculous narrative that this is about white supremacy, it, in my mind at least, is starting on a page that people who do believe the verdict was about race can agree with. And I am going to stand by what I said about Kyle Rittenhouse. Maybe I could have used a better phrase than punk kid. But look, I've covered riots in Seattle for more than a decade. And one of the things I would always do, whether I was on the radio or on TV later in my career, is we'd always tell people just stay away from downtown because we always knew what was going to happen at these riots and how dangerous the situation would be. And to me, in my opinion, and that's what I'm giving here, is my opinion, a 17-year-old, even if his intentions were noble to protect businesses, should not have been down there, knowing how volatile the situation was. In, again, my opinion, I think that if you go into a situation like that, knowing full well what you're getting into, I think that's a really dumb thing to do and an immature thing to do. And I think that's what you were seeing there, is a 17-year-old who wasn't thinking clearly. Now, the point that someone made, which is, you know, why didn't you cheapen your argument by not bringing up that BLM and Antifa and anarchists are punks? Of course they're punks. I've been saying that in Seattle for like 10, 12 years. I didn't say it because I guess that goes without saying that if you're out and you're burning down businesses or you're looting or you're rioting, you're more than a punk. You're a criminal. And my point with Kyle Rittenhouse is he's not a criminal. But he's a pretty misguided 17-year-old, and honestly, I wonder where his parents were in telling him, hey, that's not a good idea. So I do worry that that one word I used, you know, call him a punk kid, took away from the broader point that I was trying to make in my segment. You can watch it on my YouTube channel, which is that there's a lot of people out there who might dislike Kyle Rittenhouse for a variety of reasons, but that doesn't make him a criminal. That doesn't mean that he should spend the rest of his life in prison because you just don't like him or because he's white. So I wanted to get that out of the way because I did get a lot of criticism on that, including from family and friends. And so I was like, oh God, people are upset. But the nice thing is that part of this is being able to have rational disagreements. And one of the things I told you guys when I launched Undivided is you're not always going to agree with what I say, probably half the time. And so I appreciate hearing from you. I want you to know that I do read those comments and I do consider them. And I think if I could go back, I probably wouldn't use the phrase punk kid. I would probably say immature kid. And I do wonder where his parents were in terms of telling him to stay home that night. One other thing I want to touch on from the show on Sunday is that I have, for the first time ever, endorsed something. It's obviously not something that I have done as a journalist to this point. Or something I was obviously allowed to do for good reason in previous jobs. But now that I'm working for myself, I am going to, from time to time, endorse things that I really feel like rise to the level of it being important enough for me to get behind and to try to use my platform to the extent that I can to advocate for things. As I said on the show Sunday, I'm going to do this very judiciously. You are not going to see me issue endorsements of candidates. I have no plans to do that. But I am going to put my support behind Initiative 1436. Initiative 1436 would make Washington State's new long-term care tax optional. For those of you who aren't familiar with the long-term care tax, it goes into effect starting January 1st, and it is going to take 58 cents from your paycheck for every $100 you make your entire working life. And then when you retire, if you qualify, you can get a payout of up to $36,500 to help with the cost of long-term care. Now, on its face, look, I get that this is a well-intentioned idea, that you have a lot of Americans who have not saved enough to be able to pay for long-term care if they need it when they're older. But this is basically the government stepping in and saying, hey, we're going to not only force people to save, but force you to save for other people. Because there are some really substantial issues with the way the long-term care tax is formulated. For example, this is just a Washington State thing. So if you decide, you work in Washington State your entire life, and then you decide to leave and go to California or Arizona or the beach in Mexico somewhere, you forfeit this benefit. It only pays out if you're getting that long-term care in Washington. And, you know, a lot of us don't even know, have no clue where we're going to retire. I don't know. I probably won't be in Washington. It might be like in Idaho or Montana or something. But so you're going to pay all this money over time, and then you might not benefit from it. Another issue, if you live, let's say, in Idaho or Oregon, but you commute and you work in Washington, well, you have to pay this tax again, as long as you're working in Washington, but you can't benefit from it if you get long-term care in another state. Another issue, if you're really close to retirement, you're going to have to start paying into this fund on January 1st, but you won't be working long enough to be vested in it and to benefit from it. So then we're taking money from the paychecks of individuals who should be saving every dime they can because they're close to retirement. And there's a variety of other issues. You know, one of the wrinkles to this was that you could opt out. There was a one-time opportunity to opt out if you purchased private long-term care insurance. Well, the issue is all those companies that offer private long-term care insurance pulled those plans out of Washington State because they knew what was going to happen. They knew people would purchase the private plan, then they'd opt out of the state plan, and in a few weeks or a few months, they'd cancel the private plan. And so those private companies are like, that's not good business for us, and who can blame them? So there are a variety of issues with this. And I know even the governor has suggested that, hey, we could go and make some fixes to this. But the reason I feel very strongly about supporting 1436, which would allow you, Initiative 1436, which would allow you to opt in or opt out, is because I really believe that the passage of the long-term care tax was one, just sloppy government. You know, to push this thing through with such glaring issues and say, oh, we'll fix it later. That's ridiculous. And then the other thing is we're in the middle of a pandemic. We know how much people have struggled financially during this period of time. And you're passing another tax to take money out of their paychecks. If you're going to do that, it needs to be thought through. You need to use common sense, careful consideration. And that wasn't done here. I got a chance today to speak with Kerry Condotta. He's a former state lawmaker, and he is also the spokesperson for Yes on 1436. Kerry, thanks for being here.
Absolutely, Brandy. It's great to be with you today.
Now, you might have heard, I did something I've never done before. I endorsed your initiative. First thing I've ever endorsed in my life. Kerry, what is your reason for being behind it in this way?
Well, Brandy, first, thank you for that endorsement. And we certainly are glad you're back on the air in various forms. We've enjoyed your work for some time.
Thank you.
Restore Washington has been working on initiatives for the last couple of years, trying to develop a system where we could basically get initiatives qualified in between 90 and 120 days on a volunteer basis. Now, that requires an awful lot of folks being involved, and we have managed to get about 88,000 folks on our program right now. But even with that, it's a big task to get 400,000 votes. This particular initiative came along because I think you did a great description. It's just a bad piece of legislation. Now, I wrote a lot of legislation in the 16 years I was there, and I saw a lot of legislation. And this has to be one of the worst programs I've seen. It's just poorly designed, poorly executed. And as you stated, it has very little benefit for the amount of dollars that most people will pay. So we expected that when November came along and people finally saw this and realized, because it's interesting, the new trend is to pass these things and push them off a couple of years so that people forget about them, and then they rear their ugly head. And we saw this coming, and we decided we should do something about it.
Now, as you said, you worked down in Olympia. You know how challenging it can be to put sound legislation together that's complicated. One of the things that I've heard from the folks who support this, and even the governor said recently, hey, you know, nothing's perfect on the front end. We can go in this session. We can clean it up a little bit. We can deal with some of these glaring issues. I mean, is that a fair argument to say, hey, we're going to improve it over time?
Well, I think if you like, you know, if they want to keep the mandatory thing, that's the part that bothers me the most. I think if they can restyle this into something that's competitive with the private market, well, okay, let's see what you've got. But frankly, the folks should have a last say on whether they want to be in it or not. As you said earlier, there's folks that have planned for this a future. They've already set it up. They know where they're going. They don't need this. And so it should be voluntary one way or the other. Again, if they can come up with a good plan that makes sense and it actually has a decent payoff in the end, then it should be out there to compete, I suppose. But I think the private market can handle this. I don't think the state needs to be involved. And if they are going to be involved, there's other ways to do this that would probably be far more productive.
Let's say that they do make it that, you know, Initiative 1436 is successful, and at the end of the day, this is optional. You can opt in or opt out. If you make it optional, can the program be viable?
Well, I guess that's yet to be seen, but I would tend to think, based on the current return on investment, no, because I can't imagine why anybody would invest in this. Now, could they make the return much higher, and could they take the portability issue out, and could they do the vesting immediately? I mean, there's a lot of things that would make it more attractive, but I'm not sure, having worked on the Finance Committee for years, I'm not sure you can make this work with the level of taxes that they're actually talking about right now, which is one of the highest payroll taxes we've seen. I think they'd have to probably move that considerably higher. And at that point, I just don't see anybody being that interested.
Well, don't you think all the state lawmakers who voted for the tax would opt in?
Well, I don't know that they're exempt, but it would never surprise me. Look, this thing has to go back to square one. Can they modify it? Can they fix it? Personally, if I were down there, I'd tear it up and I wouldn't start over. I don't think it's necessary. But if you have to have one, at least do it right. Put some benefit in it and make it work for the folks. This thing doesn't work. And you hit something else on the head. Right now, with inflation running at 6+%, the last thing we need to do is reduce people's paycheck any further. We have some of the highest payroll taxes in the state of Washington between unemployment insurance and workers' comp, and now the paid family leave program, which, by the way, as you know, is going up 50%. That premium is going up 50%. You add all those up, and this on top of it, you're going to see a significant reduction in people's household income, and this is not the time to have that happen.
You said 400,000 signatures. Is that what you need?
Yeah, well, it takes about 325, 327, but they want you to have a 20% margin because some of those signatures won't qualify. They're not registered voters. They run a percentage of these petitions through a check. And if the numbers come out on the group that they check, then they just extrapolate that forward. It generally takes about a 15 to 20% cushion to guarantee getting there. So we'd like to be at 400,000 plus, to tell you the truth.
Tell people where they can go to get one of the forms to fill out and make your quick pitch to anyone who might be on the fence.
Well, folks, I don't think there's very many people on the fence. The nice thing about this is it's pretty bipartisan. We've even got Democrats getting involved. I've had calls from Democrat legislators that actually hope this will move so they have some leverage to either repeal it or change it. The fact is, it's just a bad program that needs to be turned over. We can do this. 400,000 out of 8.5 million is not that hard to do. And we're going to do it. And so here's how you go about it. If you want your own individual petition, you go to yeson1436.com. That's yeson1436.com. And they will send you a petition at no charge and happy to do so. They also have on there the map that will show you locations. This is the Restore Washington map that shows you all the locations that we have out there collecting signatures. They're small businesses throughout the state of Washington, and you can even pick up a petition at most of those businesses as well. And then you can, if you want to go direct to our site, we're at restorewashington.org, and we'd love to have you on board. This is an ongoing process, Brandy. This is not our first rodeo. This will probably be the first successful one, but we intend to take on capital gains, property tax reductions, and once again, the governor's powers need to be refined and rebuilt, and we can do all that with enough help. So restorewashington.org is the place to get into the organization. Yeson1436.com is the place to get this done.
All right, I want to also, just on a lighter note, you guys watch SNL? So I do occasionally, and I will admit, like, they do have some funny segments. Sometimes I watch and I'm like, oh, it's just so annoying. But occasionally it's good for a good laugh. So they aired this this weekend. Oh my God, I thought it was so funny. I'm sure some of you will disagree, but the segment is called, they did like one of those fake game shows. And the game show is called Republican or Not.
Hello and welcome to the show. The game is simple. We're going to meet some people, and our contestants have to guess whether they're Republican or not. Seems easy, right?
And so the purpose of the game show is obvious. You've got two contestants. There's people who come out, and they give them, you know, hints about themselves, and they're supposed to guess whether they're Republican or not. The whole concept of it, I just thought was kind of ingenious. So here's one of the people, Brady, who walks out and gives his clues to the contestants.
All right, Brady, give us our first clue.
I think Facebook is evil.
Oh, wow. Because they're spreading disinformation or because they banned Donald Trump?
Not so easy, is it?
Maybe we need another hint.
I would say you do.
I buy all my produce straight from a farm.
Because you want to or because you have to?
I don't know, Miss Ohio. You the expert. Keep going, Brady.
I respect pro athletes who stand up for their beliefs.
Which athletes?
And which beliefs?
So they're not able to guess by now. The last clue is supposed to help them out.
God, I hate cops.
Okay, he is not a Republican.
Oh, sorry, so close. But no, Brady is indeed a Republican. No,
but he said he hates cops.
Yes, but he was talking about these cops.
Oh. So the cops that he's talking about are the cops who protected the Capitol building during the January 6th insurrection. And so you see the audience react with a mix of laughter and groans. All right, the next person to come out is a woman named Lacey. Let's see if the contestants can guess whether she's a Republican or not.
On Twitter, my pinned tweet is "My body, my choice."
Okay, that's a trick. She's talking about vaccines, right?
Oh, if we only knew. Another hint, Lacey.
I support Caitlyn Jenner.
In what way? Politically?
Y'all doing great. Just great.
And give us another clue.
Okay. My favorite comic is Dave Chappelle.
Starting when?
I love my job. All right, give him another one.
Last month, I went to a board meeting and complained about a book being taught in my daughter's school.
Okay, I definitely know that one. She's a Republican.
No, sorry.
What? She was complaining about a book in her kid's school.
That's right. And that book, the Bible.
Okay, one more. Let's do one more just because I honestly think this is so funny. So a woman comes out and they only introduce her as Liz. And it's obviously one of the SNL cast dressed to look like Liz Cheney. And so here's the exchange.
I'm a congresswoman from Wyoming. I'm endorsed by the NRA and have an 80% rating from the American Conservative Union.
Nobody wants to ring in?
Yeah, I really want to. It seems so obvious, but this game is weird.
My name is Liz Cheney. I'm the daughter of Vice President Dick Cheney.
She's the daughter of Dick Cheney.
Okay, y'all are being real tricky here, aren't you?
I'm a Republican.
Republican. She just said she's a Republican.
No, sorry. Again, that is wrong.
What? How?
The Wyoming Republican Party actually voted Representative Cheney out this week for opposing Donald Trump.
But I am a Republican.
You might tell everybody that, but it's not what other Republicans say.
Republican or not, that's a segment. That's a good segment. I hope that they do more of that because I actually had a good laugh out of that. Sometimes SNL has some wins. And also it's funny because just the way that they formulated those questions... You know, Republicans and Democrats, they actually have a lot in common at the end of the day. Maybe just different rationale for their beliefs, but sometimes there's some overlap there. So I thought that was very clever. Okay, I want to end with, I think targeted to the Seattle audience, but it's intriguing really for anyone. And also it has to do with this, what I think is a really common media narrative that everything is absolutely racist and how the media kind of spins that. There is an alt weekly newspaper in Seattle called The Stranger. And I'm sure, you know, if you don't live in Seattle, your town probably has one too. I know Portland has one. And they're just like hyper, hyper left political coverage and all of that. Like they're, you know, when Chaz Chop was happening in Seattle, the occupied protest zone, they were like basically Chaz Chop correspondents, like supporting the movement. So that gives you an idea of what The Stranger is. So for those who don't live in Seattle, you probably have heard of our city councilwoman, Shama Sawant. She is a socialist. And she is one of the only elected socialists in the entire country. And she's actually the longest serving Seattle City Council member right now. She's in her third term. However, on December 7th, she faces a recall vote. On December 7th, the voters in her district, District 3 in Seattle, which is actually the area around the former autonomous protest zone, will get to decide whether she keeps her seat or not. And this is a result of her actions around the time that CHOP came into existence. Namely, the Washington Supreme Court, which is progressive by anyone's standards, the Washington State Supreme Court approved 3 recall charges against Shama Sawant. And I should also note, Washington law makes it very difficult to get a recall effort approved. It's not like California where you can recall someone for like literally anything. Here it's very, very challenging. You have to kind of have a case for misfeasance or malfeasance. It's spelled out very specifically in RCW. So the Washington State Supreme Court approved not one, not two, but three recall charges to move forward against Councilwoman Sawant. First, that she abused her power by letting Black Lives Matter protesters into Seattle City Hall during the pandemic in violation of COVID rules. The second one, she led a group of protesters to the home of Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan. And you might say, well, what's the big deal there? Well, Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan is a former United States attorney, and her address is actually protected under a state program due to death threats she's received from her time as a U.S. attorney. So Councilwoman Sawant basically abused her knowledge of where the mayor lived to lead hundreds of people there, and the mayor's home has been the target of vandalism ever since. And then the third charge is that Councilwoman Sawant misused taxpayer funds to support a ballot initiative to tax Amazon. And this is something she's been knocked for before. You know, you'll always see Sawant surrounded by people with these big red signs. It might be about renters. It might be about taxing Amazon. And she's been knocked by her own council colleagues for printing all those things and using city resources to do them. And they're like, hey, you know, that's a misuse of taxpayer money. And so that is one of the other recall charges against her. Now, the stranger, which, you know, is very pro-Sawant, sent out this email blast to readers that said, Sawant's recall is racist. Join the stranger in fighting it. And this email goes on to talk about, you know, just ask people to vote no on the recall against Sawant. But it doesn't get into, the email doesn't get into at all why the recall is racist. Sawant, so you know, is a woman of color. It's just odd to me that this email calls her recall racist and then doesn't say anything about why. It does, however, have this paragraph at the bottom that's highlighted in bright yellow. And it says, we welcome tips for this effort. Your support directly ensures that we're able to continue covering this racist and conservative-backed recall election and whatever comes after it. So they've got this absolutely fear-mongering email that calls this recall racist and conservative without explaining their logic. And then it asks for, it has this link where you can donate to the stranger. And it's like, okay, the race baiting is clear now. You're trying to scare people in Seattle, trying to guilt them. Oh, if you don't, you know, donate to us, you're racist or you're a conservative. So I thought that was interesting, but not surprising. But if you actually go read their endorsement or anti-endorsement of the recall effort, they have like one line on why they believe that this recall is racist. I'll read it to you. And this is the Stranger's editorial board, like the equivalent of their editorial board. They wrote, while the individuals who work for the recall campaign might say they vote for Democrats and oppose racism, they are ultimately taking money from hundreds of Republican donors, including at least 98 Trump donors, and using an undemocratic process to remove a woman of color from power for supporting BLM protesters two summers ago. That's what's going on here. No, that's not what's going on here. First of all, I love that they call this an undemocratic process. Is there anything more democratic than having a vote of the people to decide whether to remove someone that they voted into office? This is literally her constituents who get to vote on this. I don't see how that's undemocratic. And, you know, they're saying this is about removing a woman of color from power for supporting BLM protesters. No, I just laid out what the three charges are, and there's very little dispute that Sawant is guilty of doing those three things. And it has nothing to do with the color of her skin. By that standard, a person of color, a politician of color can do anything they want, any sort of misfeasance, malfeasance. But if somebody tries to call them out for it, they're racist. That's absolutely ridiculous. Now, what I want to get into is this accusation that this is a right-wing recall. And this is a narrative that Sawant has used from the beginning. First of all, she calls anyone who's right of her right-wing, which is basically everyone, right? There's this columnist, Danny Westney, with the Seattle Times, who is definitely not conservative. Yet she always calls him conservative, right-wing, and I always have a good laugh every time. So it's just funny. But when you really look at the numbers, it's laughable, the narrative that the stranger is trying to paint here. So let's look at the numbers first for the Recall Sawant campaign. This is the campaign that's behind the effort to unseat her. So far, they've raised about $745,000. Now, 18% of that money has come from people who live outside the city. So 18% of donations to help recall Sawant is from people who don't even live in Seattle. But 40% of all donations are from people who live in Sawant's district. So 40% of donations to the Recall Sawant campaign are from people who live in District 3. Now, in contrast, let's look at the numbers for the Shama Solidarity Campaign. This is the campaign that's trying to defend her against the recall. They've raised more money, $844,000. But guess what percentage of that came from outside the city of Seattle? 54%. 54% of all that money they've raised to defend her is not even from people in the city of Seattle. In fact, a measly 23% was donated from people in her own district. So the Recall Sawant campaign has far more money that's coming from inside District 3, as opposed to the Shama Solidarity campaign, which is being funded by out-of-state donors. Yet here you have Sawant and the Stranger calling people who support the recall racist and right-wing. So basically, they're calling the people in District 3 racist and right-wing. If that's not an argument for the recall, I don't think they're doing themselves any favors. So they can call people who want to recall Sawant racist, they can call them right-wing, but they're talking to their own, in the Stranger's case, their own readers, and in Sawant's case, her own constituents. And she might think all this out-of-state money is going to help her keep her seat, but it's going to be an uphill battle. I don't know, frankly. She didn't win by very much the last time that she was elected. And there's a lot of businesses and people up there who are furious about Chaz Chop, who, you know, she supported that entire takeover of the East Precinct. I can't guess this one, but I will say the strategy the Stranger and Sawant are using, it's very clever to call it racist. It's very clever to call it right-wing, especially in a city that votes so progressive. But I really hope that people are smarter than that. I'm not telling people how they should vote, but I at least want them to vote using factual information, not fear-mongering. All right, thank you so much for joining us on the Undivided podcast. And hey, I welcome your feedback. I know some of you aren't thrilled with how I started my Kyle Rittenhouse segment. That's fine. I probably should have used a different word besides punk. Maybe an immature kid, something like that. You know, in his mom's own words, he wouldn't have gone back if he could do it all again. And I wish there had been that thought at the beginning. But I understand, you know, the criticism. I'm always going to take your criticism seriously. And now, you know, that I'm independent, you guys pay my salary, and I'm always going to listen to everything that you have to say and take it to heart and consider my coverage and how I use my platform. If you haven't already, make sure to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. On Instagram, I just post pictures of my dogs, but that's fun too. And if you have not become a subscriber already, I sure would love for you to do so. You can do that at patreon.com/undivided, patreon.com/undivided. We're up to more than 2,000 subscribers. The goal is 15,000 to be able to expand the work that we're doing into a studio space, to be able to make some hires, and really try to push a new movement in the media.